Welcome to the Upshot subscriber bonus segment for this week. I'm Charlie. He's Jamie. We're taking some mailbag questions and continuing the conversation about the start of the season. We've got some great stuff to get to. So let's jump in with an email that we got from Mike. And Mike emails and says, I agree fully that our top pros have outgrown the courses at the Memorial. But I also think it is a great way to kick off the season for a couple of reasons. Number one, thousands of avid disc golf fans have played that event and have a great understanding of those shots and have a history with their inability to make it look so easy. Number two, Dukes and Spinners. The ability for young fans to get close to their idols is unmatched at any other event. I think the event needs to look at the Waste Management Open for ideas. That's on the PGA Tour. And continue to host an amazing Fun in the Sun event to kick off the season. Just my two cents. Thank you. Great work on the podcast. Thank you, Mike. Jamie, I'll let you take this one first. Thoughts on Mike's reasoning for the Memorial? He acknowledges that they've outgrown the courses, the pros have outgrown the courses, but likes the event to start the season. So what do you think?
Well, I definitely embody number one of his point, that those of us that have played the event, I did play a handful of years ago in AM1. I think it was 2015. And yeah, my game was not ready for those courses. They're not as easy as those pros make them look. There's just a certain level that you have to be at, and then all of a sudden the course gets very easy. And if you're not at that level, that course, both of those courses are very, very difficult. So when the pros make it so easy, there's definitely that issue that you look at it from the other side and you're like, oh, this sucks. Oh, another park job? Great. Let's see if this guy misses a 9-footer. I don't. So I get it. I have to say, until we had Paige on last week and she brought up that point, I hadn't really thought about it, just because I was thinking like the courses that I know exist in the area. But Paige's point, as a reminder, was we shouldn't move away from the scene, but we should move away from the courses. And I think this actually fits what Mike is saying. Like, he's saying that the vibe of the event is essentially more important to the tour than the golf or the results of the event. And I think that's a fair thing to say. And I think the Waste Management Open is a great comparison. I would love to see the stadium hole recreated in disc golf, where fans are encouraged to be loud and yell and heckle the players a little bit. You know, that, like, that's epic. If you guys haven't gone out and watched the year that Tiger Woods aces it in front of the fans, like, that's, go watch it. It's just, you can find it on YouTube. It's amazing. It's so much fun. So I agree. And I've definitely spent a lot of time at Dukes and Spinners. I've bought my share of beers there in the past. So it's a cool vibe. The problem with it, Charlie, is it's just a little old school. Like, the way you interact with those players when he brings up that point, and like the way that the pro-am side of disc golf was, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, that's really cool to golden age and to save it. But then you have to ask yourself, are you saving it for nostalgia, or are you saving it because it's something worthy of being saved because it still has value in where the sport's going compared to where it's been? And I think where you fall on that, on those two perspectives, kind of informs how you feel about this event.
All right, so I got a couple thoughts here. First of all, I don't buy the argument that because AMs have played in a course, that therefore, you know, it's a good event on tour because they'll be so impressed by the pros playing it. You could make that argument about literally any course on the planet. And like, okay, if you want to pick an urban course that a lot of people play, you could do the same. I mean, there's any course that people play that then the pros play a tournament at, you're going to be able to make this argument. I don't think it's a good argument to make for keeping an event on tour or not, because of course it's true, right? if you watch 1050 rated players play a course when you're 900 rated, you're going to be like, God damn, they're good, which, yes, they are good. So I don't buy that one. But I will say, I also like the Waste Management Open concept. Now, here's the thing about the Waste Management Open. For those that don't follow golf, this is the biggest spectator tournament on tour. 500,000 people come out every year to this tournament in Phoenix, in Scottsdale. And the stadium hole that Jamie's talking about, there's like 20,000 people chilling, getting really drunk, heckling, and hooking up. Like, this is like a known thing. It's like a very debaucherous tournament from a spectating standpoint. And I think, you know, if you can get disc golf to the point where it was drawing enough fans for that kind of to be the atmosphere, this could be an event where that would feel appropriate. Like, really taking a page out of the book of what we see on the golf tour. Now, as it stands, I don't think we're really there. And one of the challenges is that these courses are like in public parks where there's just constant distraction, not in a good way, right? Not in the fans are sitting here and this is kind of like designed, but rather like someone just walked across the fairway with their dog taking a dump in the middle of the fairway. So I don't know. I get the idea of wanting to have like a kind of easier course at some point on tour where it's mostly about just pure hyzer shot making and putting. I think as we talked about last week on the show, having one of the stops on tour be something like that and not just grueling, difficult disc golf is totally fine. The question is, how do you take this event from leaving players feeling frustrated by how easy it is and make it compelling? What can you do to amp that up? Can you lean into the fact that it's easy and like have, give away a car for an ace run on a certain hole, or have like a crazy high cash bonus CTP, like make there be other events where there's like, players playing skins games and stuff. I don't know, like finding a way to, because like it tries to be this like the memorial. You know, we're starting the season and it's just this really important and prestigious event. And yet the golf is like kind of not very interesting. So I would rather them either, you have to go one way or the other. You want to have it be super prestigious? Well, then you probably need to change your courses. You probably need to change. You got to make it harder. You got to rethink everything. You can't go USDGC Mando Land. I don't want to see that. You can go that way. I don't know if you'll really be able to, given the fact that the tournament's in Arizona. So instead, you can go the other way and be like, we're leaning into the fact that this is an easy tournament, and we're gonna make that part of the vibe. And right now, it's in a bad middle ground. The pros feel like they've outgrown the courses, which, based on their scores, they certainly have. And you end up in a situation where it's people are just left feeling frustrated.
It's so funny. It's like you're reading my notes for the Pro Tour, for the broadcast. One of the things that I've been taking notes on for our shows is we need to have more thematic tournaments on the tour. Like, it's exactly what you said. I think the Memorial should lean into that image that they have. Yes, this is the party tournament, you know, obviously within reason, but, you know, allow it. Encourage the fun, encourage the, you know, to be respectful, but to have, you know, let your hair down, don't wear the, you know, unbutton the top button kind of thing. You know what I'm trying to say? Because I think that'd be great. It helps the tournament stick in people's minds. The Pro Tour should 100% be doing this. And they should be encouraging the tournament directors to modify their courses and to modify their event programming for both fans and players to further solidify that message and to further solidify that, like, hey, this is the slot you're going to play as long as you're on the Pro Tour. That's really, we talked about a few years ago, I don't want to get too off topic here, but we talked about when the Pro Tour was getting going, how it was going to be years before they had to build their prestige, right? And I think we're at that point now where it's on par with the national tour. It got there. It had to take a little while. Well, how do you take that next step and go past what the national tour has done? Well, let's look at the national tour playbook. You leave it, you leave almost everything to the local organizing committees. Well, odds are, if you're going to work hard enough to put a tour event on in your town, you want it to be felt prestigious. You want people to come and feel like they had that kind of experience there, that USDGC kind of thing. There's not a whole lot of events. I mean, there's a handful that are just like, we're going to do what we do regardless. But for the most part, everybody's kind of following at least somewhat of a blueprint of prestige and gravity and all that stuff. So how can the Pro Tour take the next step to where the National Tour has yet to get to? You start carving out the lanes for your tournament and you say, okay, it's not the Pro Tour and we're going to have these 10 events and this is why we're great. It's, this is the Pro Tour. This is the story we're going to tell. In the early season, we're going to test your execution and how rusty you are. Yeah, the courses are going to be easier. The scores are going to be lower, but you're going to see some incredible shots. As we get to the middle of the season, we are going to put you in the wind. We are going to make you doubt your execution that you did in the first part. We're going to put you in the Midwest where there's no trees, there's flat ground, and you're either going to be 5 inches or 5 meters away at the closest. I needed a way more hyperbolic distance than 5 meters, but you know what I'm trying to say. You know, like it needs to be something that we can easily grasp on to each event. And that way the season doesn't feel sluggish and long and et cetera, et cetera. It always feels like it's something fresh because we know what we're getting into. So that's where it needs to go, hands down.
All right, let's go to the next email. This one comes from Fletcher. And Fletcher writes, I noticed that tee times for the Memorial seem to heavily favor 1,000-plus rated players with later tee times. I posted about it on Reddit and got a response from Jordan Castro, who said the Disc Golf Pro Tour is now doing this at the request of MPO Touring Pros. I understand the reasoning behind a move like this, but thought it would be a good topic for discussion since it brings up questions of fairness and priority treatment of competitors. And indeed, it is a bit of a gray area in terms of the PDGA rules about how tournaments are to set up their first round. It's definitely leaning on the side of being unfair by clustering, you know, the better players with later tee times, which is definitely not something we've really ever seen before. Of course, players, as they play well, earn better tee times in later rounds. But in the very first round, it's supposed to be basically randomized unless you have some kind of feature card or something like that, which they allow. So what do you think, Jamie? The Pro Tour is doing this. Is it legit? Do you think it's the right move?
Well, it depends on what the goal is, right? I don't see a problem with it, personally. Just like I don't see a problem with a feature card. And I feel like this because of two things. One, there's a contingent of disc golfers whose perspective is that everything has to be quote-unquote fair. Well, that's really an impossible task. This is golf. I mean, down, like, Charlie, you and I could throw the exact same shot with the exact same disc, and we could hit the exact same tree, and you could have the worst kick in the world, and I could have the best kick in the world. And we're not going to get the same thing on that hole. Is that fair?
How come I have to get the worst kick?
Well, because you don't play disc golf enough to have opinions. So duh.
Continue.
So you know what I mean? Like the point is that the game is not fair by nature. So I understand that humans naturally want to have like a level playing field and to feel like things are fair in life. I want to feel like you and I could get the same kick, Charlie, that we could have an opportunity to retire and, you know, start a business and have money for our families and things like that. On the disc golf course, I have no such illusions that things are going to be equitable. it is what it is. And that's part of the beauty of golf, is you need to be lucky sometimes. When Paul McBeth shot 18 down, he had a couple great catches on not great putts. You know, those baskets caught pretty well on a couple of them.
You know what? And so, here's the thing. Right. I've thought about this, and you know, even though it goes against kind of the way disc golf's been done in the past, it honestly feels appropriate to me for the Pro Tour to do something like this. I mean, first of all, they're moving MPO tee times into the morning and moving FPO to, you know, tee off after the men. And so, you know, I never really thought it was fair for the top FPO players to have to play at 7 a.m. And I don't really want to see the top MPO players play at 7 a.m. either. It's bad for spectatorship. It's bad for developing, you know, hype around your first round. That's just not how it should work. In some ways, it would feel more unfair if, you know, the select eight players who get to be on a feature card tee off at, you know, 11 a.m. and the other 1,025 rated players have to tee off in the very first card. That seems unfair. To me, we're going to get to the point where you have to be like a card-carrying member to be on the Disc Golf Pro Tour, right? Just like the PGA Tour. And if you're prioritizing the best players, that just makes obvious sense. This is a business. I don't think this is not some level of unfairness that goes too far. You know, saying we're going to prioritize better tee times or later tee times for players who are actually going to have a chance to win this event seems very reasonable to me. And I, you know, even though it hasn't necessarily been done that way in the past, I don't have a problem with it. It just seems like the right thing to do. And we're trending that way, right? Tournaments are going to start getting to the point, once we have some actual sponsorship money rolling around in the sport, where there's not going to be 300 players in MPO. There's going to be 50 or 100. That's it. Because it's just going to be the best players. You know, more tournaments are going to start looking like USDGC.
Do you buy it when a pro says, oh, my card was playing so well, and that's why I played so well, and that's why you can't have feature cards, because if I get paired with a lesser rated pro, then my chances of having a great card energy and all of us doing well are less? Because that's kind of the mentality, behind this, if the players are pushing for it, right?
Well, right, and doesn't this improve the situation for those players who complain?
It does.
Right? So it's now you're not going to end up paired with a bunch of 920 rated players. You're going to be playing with other 1,000 plus rated players. So there is no weak ass excuse. And to be fair, it is a weak ass excuse. Now, the thing is, anytime I talk to players when I'm out covering events, they talk about that energy on the card. It's a real thing. I think it definitely affects people's performance. Now, you can say that it shouldn't. You can say that, hey, you know, play your game. It's you against the course. But the vibe on the card does impact play. Or at least it gives pros the appearance that it's impacting their play. So, you know, I mean, I think we can all relate to feeling like we have more fun when everyone on the card is playing well versus when you got one guy who's screaming obscenities because he keeps missing shots. Kind of brings down the vibe. And this is going to allow for less kind of like what seems like unfair randomness for players who are actually competitive. Because let's be honest, you know, sub 1,000 rated players are not going to win Pro Tour events ever.
Sure. Hey, as a sub 1,000 rated player who's played Pro Tour events, I was never going to win that thing. But I'm glad you said it was an excuse, because I think so too. And I guess, you know, there is a danger on the other side of this. Like, look, if the touring pros are going to the Pro Tour and saying, hey, this is what we want, it's not because they're going to the Pro Tour and saying, this would be more fair for everybody. I mean, some people may say that, but in reality, it's, this is what would be better for me. Because everybody's trying to earn a paycheck out there. it's all kumbaya until you get in the way of me eating next week. You know what I'm saying? It's all, let's grow this thing together. Rising tide lifts all boats until...
I'm going to get mine.
Yeah. Oh, that so-and-so is going to make that putt? Psh, I got to eat too. My bonus is on the line, you know?
So. Yeah. Last question from Sam. I want to touch on something you guys were talking about on this week's episode. Now, last week's episode. When you were asking if live coverage could overtake post-production, you really hit on something when you mentioned narrative. You hit the nail on the head, simply put. I watched all rounds live and none on post-production. You know, Sam noticed that there were just some moments in the live coverage that weren't highlighted in the post-produced coverage. And finishes up by saying, I'm not saying that either is better. Like you said, both are different animals. Both provide a different narrative for the weekend. I guess this is not exactly a question, but I will respond and say that, you know, that is going to be one of the things about live coverage that makes it more compelling. Number one, things are happening in real time, and you can feel the tension of that. Post-produced coverage is edited so tightly, there's no breathing room. It's honestly it's a relevant critique of the post-produced style of coverage. Like, once in a while, they could just put 60 seconds of players walking to the next tee. In a big spot, like late in the round. And the thing is, it's hard because they're trying to turn stuff around within 18 hours. And you don't have time to like think about like artistic choices.
Right.
When you're just trying to get the golf turned around and you're like, we got to get the shots. We got to get the drone footage. We got to get the whole preview, you know, all that stuff that they put in there. And the thing is, it sort of saps the... It can be really good when you want to watch somebody who just had an exceptional round in an efficient way, because it's great to watch a round in 45 minutes to an hour instead of having to sit through 4.5 hours of live. But when you want to watch the end of a tournament and there's a battle back and forth, you're going to get more of a sense of the buildup and the excitement by watching in real time. Just like in baseball, when you're watching the pitcher get the sign, think, crowd is roaring, you're waiting for the pitch. Pitch comes, strike three. Incredibly exciting. Now, you pick your sport if you don't like baseball, but disc golf also has those buildups. You have that downtime to get ready for the next hole. Is Eagle going to make the shot and tie Calvin Heimburg or not? When you watch it on post, it doesn't have that same energy. Everything is easy to watch. It's easier to consume, but it doesn't have that same energy. So I think that's one of the things that live's always going to have as a kind of an advantage over post-produced, no matter how you slice it, because A, you don't know the outcome, and B, you are feeling the excitement right along there with everyone, including the players.
It kind of goes to what we were talking about in terms of creating lanes for each tournament. If you want to cultivate a particular vibe and unique vibes for each stop on tour, you can do that a lot easier with live coverage than post coverage. Because, like, you know, post coverage is a template at this point. Shot A, slot it here, slot it here. Okay, we already have our pre-measured breaks. All we're doing is just like replacing the clip with the new scoreboard each time. You know, they're not building that from scratch each and every night. That's how they can get it out so fast. Well, let's turn this into, let's take this next level though, because I think we've gone over some of this ground before. What would it take, in your opinion, Charlie, and then I can add mine, for live coverage? Like, what is the thing that is going to separate the narrative for live coverage? If you were producing this, the show I'm about to go call this weekend, what are some of the things that you would look at and say, okay, here's what we got to do to make this narrative different, even more different from post than it was last time at the Memorial?
Like, if I'm specifically working on the Memorial?
Or, like, I mean, it could be a vibe thing, it could be a specific idea thing, but, like, what are some of the things that you would say, these are good moves to kind of further separate live and post into two different things?
Well, I love being able to get inside the action a little bit more with things like interviews and course sound, you know, like seeing, even potentially sometimes hearing discussion between players, right? You know, if you get to the point where you can wire players for sound and then use selected sound bites to kind of add to the broadcast, that's a really cool and exciting and different way that you could feature that in real time. I think you could do more to like highlight past exciting moments, like as the players go to 18, having a you know, a clip of somebody winning on the 18th in Memorial from 15 years ago or from 5 years ago, and you know, building up and like, this is how so-and-so, this is how Ken Klima won this tournament 15 years ago with an incredible shot. Can we see this get replicated? You know, that kind of stuff. And I mean, I feel like I have tons of ideas, and I'm not going to give them all away for free here on a free, not totally free, but a relatively free podcast. But I think, you know, there's just a lot you can do when you have the time to build up the moment.
Yeah. Some of those ideas may already be in the works for the Pro Tour. I can say that based on some things
very
that
cool
you just said.
Very cool. So,
but I agree. I think in general, it's about the thing that I tell that we talk about all the time when we do our calls is telling the story that's in front of us and not worrying about the story we can't see. So that's sort of our, where we start. And then we kind of, we try to make decisions based on that and go forward. But I do find it interesting because something I never thought would happen is a couple people were sending messages last week. They were saying, hey, I didn't even watch the post coverage, which is, that's kind of cool. I didn't, eventually that was going to happen in disc golf. I didn't think I would see people saying that this early on. So I definitely think that, you know, Sam is right here that like the goal should be, if it wasn't already, the goal should be, just like with tournaments, finding a lane, finding what part of the overall story of the Pro Tour season that you can most stand out in and be different and unique. So it kind of all circles around the same thing.
That's going to do it for our subscriber bonus segment this week. Thank you so much for being a subscriber and listening. Keep in mind, if you're listening to this on the website, you can get this bonus segment as a feed in your podcasting apps of choice. Now, not every app has it, but most of the major players do. On your My Settings page on UltiWorld, you'll find a private RSS feed. You copy that feed, you put it into the app that you use, like Overcast or Apple Podcasts, and you can then get this as a feed, so you don't have to hunt it down on the website. So just in case you were wondering. That's going to do it. Thank you so much. For Jamie, I'm Charlie, saying so long. We'll talk to you next week right here on the subscriber segment.
See ya.